Welcome, welcome. Today we're answering the question, should or can you train while you're sick? I'm also going to be releasing this as an audio-only podcast. So if you're listening to this in an audio-only fashion on Apple iTunes or on Spotify or on YouTube, just know that this is also a lecture that I've recorded for my training app. We have a ton of exclusive content, lectures with slides and images. And there are, of course, coinciding slides and images that go along with what you're listening to. And so if you're interested, that is one thing we do in my training app. So without further ado, let's jump into this here. So we're going to talk about what's called the neck check, which is something that I think most people have heard of in one way or another. We'll talk about what the research currently shows us about some of these things. We'll talk about lifting versus cardio. Is there a difference in terms of general advice? If you're sick, is it okay to do lifting? Is it not okay to do lifting? Is it better to do cardio, etc.? If you do choose to take some time off, how to ease back in some of those best practices. And then, as always, we'll wrap things up with a summary and give you some advice on the way out. Some disclaimers. While we will discuss when it may be okay to do some exercise, it's always a safe bet to rest and take it easy. A few days, a week, a couple of weeks, isn't making or breaking your health and fitness long-term. Generally, I'd lean towards a more conservative approach since short breaks don't really make a big difference anyway. And none of this is medical advice. If you are unsure, always consult with a medical professional if it's okay to exercise in a certain fashion with your symptoms. A conservative approach should be your default. Talk with your doctor first. So we're going to start with this first chapter titled The Neck Check. And this is something that I think most people have heard about in some way, shape, or form. And I'll go through it, then we'll talk about it a bit more. Essentially, the neck check says that if you have symptoms above the neck, and we'll talk about what those are in a minute, that you might be okay to exercise. And if you have symptoms below the neck, and we'll talk about what those are as well, you're probably not okay to exercise. And I just chuckle because whenever I hear that, I think somebody, I'd say like the average person hearing that, like, I don't know how helpful that is. Like, I'm not so sure if I immediately know what that means if I'm somebody who's considered, if I Google, can I work out? And then I see that Google tells me this. I'm like, I'm not really sure what that means, right? And so symptoms above the neck, and we'll talk about the legitimacy of the neck check as well, but let's assume for a second that it's true. It means that you're probably okay to consider doing something, right? And some of these above the neck symptoms are runny nose, sneezing, mild sore throat, stuff like that, right? And my advice generally would be to meet yourself where you're at and stop if things get worse as you train, right? So if things start to take a downturn, you start to feel worse, just go with that. Listen to your body in that context. And it tends to be okay to work out with these symptoms due to a limited systemic involvement. And we'll compare these symptoms and rationale to symptoms below the neck in just a second. So it tends to be okay due to a limited systemic involvement, minimal impact on cardiac function, preserved respiratory capacity, normal body temperature, temporary, or I would say potential temporary symptom relief, minimal impact on energy levels, normal muscle and joint function. All in all, it's probably still a good idea not to go ham and stop if symptoms get worse. And again, we'll talk about what some of the research says, the legitimacy of this, best practices, etc. Symptoms below the neck, it would say, you know, the neck check would say it's probably best to rest, right? And this kind of highlights local symptoms versus systemic symptoms. The symptoms below the neck kind of encompassing a lot of those systemic symptoms like fever. Tried to find some exact numbers on this. The numbers that kept popping up were around 100 or 101 degrees Fahrenheit. Chest congestion, body aches, fatigue, dizziness, gastrointestinal issues, etc. would represent potentially your body fighting something like an infection, more systemic symptoms, and probably a good idea not to exercise and to instead rest. And typically, this is a good piece of advice due to the potential for an increased stress on the heart, risk of myocarditis, compromised respiratory function, elevated core temperature. These are things that would come from exercising. Immune system depression, impaired recovery mechanisms, and reduced coordination and increased injury risk. Again, we'll talk about maybe that in the context of what you choose to do. The TLDR here is your body's already working hard to fight an infection if you're having some of these below the neck symptoms. And exercise puts extra stress on your body, which can make things worse. Either symptoms get worse or there are prolonged symptoms. And I read a lot about this. And when I say I read a lot about this, I mean I read a lot of people saying this. Reputable people, reputable websites, you know, government websites, websites that I know to give other quality pieces of advice. And I thought, okay, like there's a lot of people saying this. What do we really know about this? And some of the research we have on the neck check, I found a paper in 1998, found that moderate exercise did not affect duration or severity of common cold symptoms in subjects with above the neck symptoms. In 2002, Barrett et al. Showed similar findings with no worsening of cold symptoms or duration with moderate exercise. So these are people with typical cold symptoms, maybe a runny nose, the sniffles, maybe a little head cold, and it did not show, you know, let's say worsening or prolonging of symptoms with people with who had above the neck symptoms. On exercise with systemic symptoms, a paper in 2014 documented cases of myocarditis complications from exercising with viral infections involving fever. So I think a fever is like a real no-go. I think a fever is a really good line in the sand, something that's very objective. You know, and again, when somebody talks about the neck check, when I heard people, oh, above the neck symptoms, below the neck symptoms, I was like, all right, but like, give me some hard things that I can absolutely look at that are objective. And I think a fever is a really good one. If you have a fever, I would rest. I would not do the type of exercise that is depleting. I would maybe only consider doing the type of movement that re-energizes somebody, that is relaxing, going for a walk, you know, maybe some light mobility or stretching, and movement that is not a stressor on the body. There's also a paper in 2000, reviewed cases of sudden death in athletes related to exercising during viral illnesses, a little bit morbid there, but also another kind of notch on the belt of, hey, maybe just chill out if you have these below the neck systemic symptoms. Studies on immune function and exercise intensity, there's a paper back in 1994 that was referenced quite a bit, suggests that moderate exercise enhances immune function while intense exercise temporarily suppresses it. So, and that wouldn't be such a big deal, by the way. I think intense exercise is important, but you wouldn't do that during already like an immunocompromised state. I think that would be probably not a good plan. And a paper in more recently in 2018 found evidence that high intensity exercise during illness may prolong recovery time. So there's a couple variables there. There's like how sick is somebody and then how intense is that exercise? And I think that those are, you know, when you think of what you should do, obviously pretty inversely correlated. The more sick, the more severe the symptom, the less you should do. I think that that's like generally something that makes sense that people understand, right? I mean, the more sick you are, probably the less you should do. You know, this is more of a discussion of like, what kind of sickness and you know, what can I do? And I think that there's a bit of a nuance there, obviously. When it comes to respiratory symptoms, specifically, 2003 paper showed that moderate intensity exercise didn't worsen rhinovirus infection outcomes. And Gleason in 2007 found that training with severe respiratory infections was associated with prolonged symptoms. Again, some of this below the neck stuff, another kind of check in that box of probably best to just chill. Most sports medicine organizations, ACSM, the IOC, have adopted the neck check guideline based on this collective evidence combined with clinical experience. And so this is kind of the sports medicine community giving the two thumbs up to the neck check as like an actual legitimate, I'd say screen, like self-screening process for, you know, at least the first kinds of questions you can start to ask yourself. I don't think it is the case that you, and I would say that none of these organizations would say what I'm about to say, which is that, oh, if you have above the neck symptoms, like screw it, just go ham, do whatever you want. You know, you can just do your normal, super intense workout, two a days, whatever. I don't think that that's the case, but I think I would phrase it as, hey, if you have symptoms above the neck, head cold, sniffles, you don't have a fever, no body aches, nothing systemic, then you can at least go down the route of considering doing something. And if you have below the neck symptoms, body ache, fatigue, gastrointestinal issues, fever, that's more of the, like, I wouldn't consider doing something. I'd consider rest and recovery. Again, just the beginning of that flow chart. I don't think it necessarily is an A to B thing where if you have above the neck symptoms, you just go ham and do what you would have normally done. What about lifting versus cardio? I tried to see if there were any, if any of these papers, most of them were in cardiovascular exercise. So when I said, you know, found evidence that high intensity exercise during illness, what they're talking about is cardiovascular exercise. Moderate intensity exercise, aerobic exercise. I did not find any studies that did like this really nice breakdown of, oh, group A was above the head, above the neck symptoms, and they lifted. And group B is above the neck, and they did cardio. And trying to see, you know, maybe which one prolonged symptoms more, that would be some interesting research. But, you know, as of now, we don't have that. So what do we know? And what are some of the pieces of advice floating around out there when it comes to lifting versus cardio in terms of the neck check? When it comes to lifting, they say that, and you can't read that, but I have that in air quotes. They say that lifting is usually more intense and harder to scale. Now, I wrote here on the slide, I said, I'm not sure about that. I don't know who they are, but I think we just, like, when you look at the research, we've been studying, like, aerobic fitness for just so long. There's so many more recommendations when it comes, for some reason, there's like a naivety, there's just like a naive, ignorant opinion around lifting. I'm not on my high horse about it, but like that was in a piece of like a sentence I read multiple times in researching this, was that lifting is usually more intense and harder to scale. I'm just not so sure about that. I mean, you could bring things, and by the way, you not only could you, these are going to be my opinion on what you should do if you want to lift and you've gone through the neck check, you've talked to your doctor, you've decided that not just the where your symptoms are above the neck, but also the severity of them has opened the door for you to lift, you know, but you know you don't feel 100%, I would just bring things down to maintenance-ish. And what does that mean? I would lower the intensity, meaning not as close to failure, or the volume, the number of sets you're doing, or both. I would also pick potentially lower systemically demanding exercises. So maybe you have a barbell back squat for that day, but you swap it out for like a leg press or something where there's just going to be a little bit less systemic fatigue. But the big ones I would probably do would be do less volume. So less sets, either go down to one hard set or do one less set, right? Of course, how far you bring down the workout prescription is a complicated individual question, obviously inversely correlated to how much you do would be inversely correlated to how sick you feel. Of course, taking that into account, I think most people's intuition kind of nod along with that. I would keep more reps in the tank. If you were supposed to do one RIR, maybe it's a 2 or 3 RIR, just enough stimulus to, you know, preserve some muscle, feel good, enjoy something that you like to do. And I would go into it with the idea of maintaining versus progressing. So like if you did 10 last week, I wouldn't, oh, I got to do 11 this week. It's like, well, maybe you start off thinking that you'll do maybe 8 or 9. And if you feel good, you can do that 10th one. And I would just change the mentality or the expectations that you're going into the workout with. Instead of aiming for progression, I would aim to maintain. But you're kind of the boss here. If things get worse, always stop. I think at some point as we talk about exercising while sick, I start to not feel very good in the context of I don't want any of what we talk about today to cause somebody to overextend. There's just no downside to taking a day off because you don't feel good, or a week off because you don't feel good, or a couple weeks off because you really got sick. This is like 10 years from now, exercise, strength training, cardiovascular training, if it's a lifelong habit, then these little small breaks aren't going to make or break anything. I recorded a podcast a couple of months ago about some of the research we have around taking breaks from training, and it just seems that over the lifespan, it probably won't matter so much. So I really would, as much as we're diving into things a little bit here in the weeds, I still get a little squirrely feeling that somebody's going to use this information to overextend, and I really do not want that to be something that people do. When it comes to aerobic training, you know, again, the folks out there in the internet sphere would say that it's more easily scaled. And I think that's, you know, if you imagine on a treadmill, it's like very easy to modulate and decrease the intensity, or right? Just like going faster, going slower, right? And that's might be, at least at face value, feel easier to scale. If you normally go for a run at a 7 mile per hour, like it's very easy to just put the treadmill on 5.5, for example. So I get that. There's a lower risk of injury from reduced coordination if you're sick. Totally. I don't think a lot of what we're doing in hypertrophy training is particularly coordinationally demanding. Obviously, that's not really a word, but you get it. If you're doing like heavy Olympic weightlifting where there is a lot of coordination involved, yes, I think that that is absolutely a relevant factor to consider. But if we're talking about like chest supported row, like calf raises, bicep curls, you know, lat pull downs, like not a ton of coordination, not a ton of injury risk. Light cardio might also actually help with congestion. It's not clear what they mean by light cardio, but I'd say zone two or less if I had to pick an intensity level. Generally, it seems like a hard lifting session is worse than a light aerobic session, right? But like, I don't know why that's not an apples to apples comparison because the intensity of them both is not equated. But again, that is something that came up a bunch. I think you can make a lifting session less intense, and I think that that would fall squarely in the category of things to consider. But intensity plus volume of either, right? So a high intensity plus a lot of volume of either is likely the biggest concern. So basically like doing your full, really high volume, really high intensity workout, that's probably not the best plan. For both types of exercise, the neck check remains valid. Symptoms below the neck are a clear sign to avoid all exercise, while above the neck symptoms might allow for very light activity if you feel up for it. And those are my words as a summation of what we've gone through here. Again, having above the neck symptoms would allow you to move through the flow chart of considering to do something. That's all. It does not give you the green light to do whatever. Now, let's say you take some time off. I don't know, a day, 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month. What about easing back in after you get sick? And I will say, Jenna, myself, and Emerson all had norovirus this past week. And I was only sick for 48 hours, but there was still an element of easing back in. I think if you're off, you know, easing back in after a couple days of, you know, puking your guts, like, you know, I was down 6 pounds. You know, my hydration probably wasn't on point. Lost water, lost energy. It was fatigued for those 2 days for sure. So even when I started feeling good, there was an element of like, even though this has only been 2 days, you have to do, you almost certainly shouldn't just jump right back into what you're doing. So let's go through some talking points as far as easing back in after you're, you know, potentially take some time off because you're sick. I will start by saying there's no perfect playbook. It's not like if you were sick for 1 day, then you modify your workouts for 1 week, and 2 days, it's 1.5 weeks, and they're modify how, you know, there's no perfect playbook on this. What I will say is whenever you take some time off, you might lose some fitness, right? Like technically speaking, you might technically lose some fitness, but you are resensitized to that stimulus. And what that means is, let's say over 2 weeks, you lose a tiny bit of muscle. Over those 2 weeks, you also resensitize to the training stimulus. And again, what that means is it's like a microcosm of being a newbie again, where you will regain muscle more quickly after a period of time off or after a period off. So you might have lost a tiny bit of muscle, but there's a tiny bit of resensitization. And so you're coming back to training with a physiological state where you don't need as much of that stimulus to get a positive adaptation. So what that means is you should be encouraged to not do as much because you don't have to do as much. If you just took 2 weeks off because you were really sick, you can do a lot less than you were doing 2 weeks ago and have it still be very stimulative. A lot of people want to jump back right where they were, but that's not what's required for you to get back on the positive adaptation train, right? Like you can do 50% of the volume you were doing before, I'm making that up by the way, and have that be a very robust stimulus that gets you back on the horse, on the positive adaptation train. So find solace in that, right? Find comfort in that. You don't, it's not like people are like, how quickly can I get back to doing what I was doing? It's not even, you don't even have to. Just get back to doing something. You're primed in a physiological state to some degree to get more out of less. So find comfort in doing less right now, right? You don't need as much. Either I tend to like meeting yourself where you're at in terms of intensity, meaning go with what intuitively feels right. If you feel, and it's specifically in terms of lifting, maybe that's a couple reps shy from failure, but maybe it's on some things you feel good enough to go to failure. I tend to bring down the volume a bit, you know, maybe a set or two less of some stuff that I find particularly fatiguing as I ease back in. As always, auto-regulate as things get worse, or if things get worse. Auto-regulate just means like changing things on the fly, like making changes to a certain program as you gather more data. So if you're in the middle of the workout and you start feeling like shit, like maybe you call it, or you know, at the very least you change something about the rest of the workout. Use adequate warm-up sets and rest periods. You know, do not rush yourself back into things. Make sure you're resting. You know, if even when I feel back ready to train after being sick, I do find that even though I subjectively feel pretty good and ready to train, that my actual recoverability is a little bit less good, meaning like in between sets, I might need a little longer. The length of the workout that I could usually withstand is a bit shorter, you know? So all of those things kind of point to this idea of like, go slow, meet yourself where you're at. You don't need to do as much today to get a really good stimulus. I mentioned this one before, but I might lower systemic exercise selection, just meaning like, you know, maybe you had a leg press today, but you're like, you know what? I'm not feeling the leg press today. I'm not feeling getting under 500 pounds here for reps. Maybe I'll just do leg extension today, just to give your system a chance to, again, ease back in. I recommend eating at calorie maintenance and staying hydrated. I just don't think this is the time for you to also put your immune system. And I'm not saying being in a small deficit wrecks your immune system, but it's just not the time I would take resources away from your body during a time where you're trying to get yourself to feel better. And as always, better safe than sorry. There's nothing wrong with just being on the more conservative side. I mean, you can't be so conservative that you never return to exercise, but I'm just saying if you're torn between two sets of something or one set of something, better safe than sorry. If you don't know for a fact that you feel up for two sets, do one set. If you don't know for a fact you feel up for one RIR, do two or three RIR. Better safe than sorry. Live to fight another day. There's always next week. You know, you're not getting all of those muscle gains back in one workout. You know, just take it slow. Summary/ best practices, and we'll wrap this up here, even though I'm sure I mentioned all of these a bunch. Conservative approach is always a safe idea. You're not losing all your gains if you default to relaxing when you feel sick. Your intuition is pretty good, but your intuition plus the neck check is probably better. Symptoms above the neck, maybe it's okay to exercise. Things like runny nose, sneezing, mild sore throat. Symptoms below the neck, probably not okay to work out, to do intense exercise. Things like fever, congestion, body ache, fatigue, gastrointestinal issues. Not okay to exercise, just rest. I strongly consider reducing intensity and or volume and definitely expectations if you choose to do something while you don't feel 100%. I feel compelled to remind you that one hard set of each of your exercises within a given program, that could be my program, could be a different program, is enough to maintain or even gain for some people. So don't poo-poo doing that during or as you ease back in. Do the type of exercise, again, if you're going to do any exercise, if you've deemed between the neck check and your own intuition about how you feel that you want to do something, do the type of exercise that leaves you feeling energized after, feeling good and calm and energized and in a good place, has you feel better afterwards, not the type of exercise that leaves you fatigued, depleted, crushed, and smashed. All right? And that is all for today. And so if you are listening to this on an audio platform and you're interested in what we do over in the group, check out the link in my bio. We have, of course, a wonderful 3 and 4 day lifting program for people at home or in the gym. I do form checks for free for everybody. There is cardio and abs included. And of course, we have a wonderful community app where you can find a ton of content, an amazing feed full of other savages who want to get strong and get in shape. And of course, more lectures like this one. All right, see you guys in the next one. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.